Today on Doomed!
The first two Democratic debates are in the bag. Folks, 20 different Democrats running for president debated over the past two nights. From Joe Biden to Bernie Sanders, from Andrew, well, I guess that would have made more sense to flip it. From Joe Biden to Andrew Yang, from Bernie Sanders to Marianne Williamson. Folks, this was quite the two nights. I don't even know whether to qualify it as, I guess they were entertaining, yet at the same time, not very educational, I guess? I don't know. But we'll get into it all right now, because joining me tonight at 12:30 a.m., Friday morning, I guess, really, technically. Let me just pull him up on the feed here so you can see him. There he is. My good pal, Mike Figueredo of the Humanist Report. Mike, thanks for joining us tonight. Oh, wait, hold on. I'm sorry. Let's put you back up. Apparently, I didn't have you up on the mic. I could just hear you. Let's try this again. Go ahead and congratulate me once more, Mike. For people who didn't hear, because I had your mic down, foolishly. Go ahead.
So I was complimenting Matt because he just posted an adorable little family photo of his new baby daughter and his son, who is like a miniature version of him. And I just thought it was a cute photo. So congrats. I can't remember what else I said. Oh, I also said that you did a great job pronouncing my name. I'm just very pleased, Matt. Thank you. And thank you for inviting me on. Whenever you get invited back on a show, that's a really good sign that you didn't say something stupid the first time. So it's good to be here.
Oh, we will test that today, I'll tell you. But no, Mike.
Yes, we will.
Mike, so I honestly wish I could go on forever talking about me, but but there was actually something, I don't know if anyone's aware who is watching this, there was actually something that happened last night and tonight, Wednesday night and Thursday night. The Democrats got together and had their first two debates. They gathered 20 of their highest polling / highest fundraising candidates, just so you know, that's not even all of them. 20 is not. Some people didn't even make the stage. Incredible.
I was so sad that Seth Moulton was left out. That's my guy. I'm rooting for him. And he didn't even make it. It's tough.
Listen,
life is hard.
The only person who didn't make it that I wish did is Gravel.
Oh, yeah. That's true. Mike Gravel. I know.
Is it Gravel? I actually never even looked it up.
Did you? Let me ask you this, because when I was old enough to vote for the first time, it was 2008, and I felt so horrible because I completely didn't even, like, think about him. I overlooked him, and I was in the tank for Obama. But going back and watching those debates, I really, really wanted him included here, because that would have been amazing to see him just call out, you know, the more terrible candidates, namely Joe Biden and anyone who's basically a fake progressive.
Right, right. He would have been, and from what I understand with the Gravel teens, they're basically obviously out to push the conversation even further left, but they're out to boost Bernie Sanders by nailing the attacks that they feel like Bernie can't do as a front runner.
Yeah, the Gravel teens are so talented. Like if I was that woke at their age, like, I could only imagine what I would be doing now. It would be incredible. So those kids are phenomenal. I sound like an old person, I realize I'm saying. You know, those kids are great nowadays, but
Not to go a little off topic here, but I feel like the conversation when I was their age was a lot different. Like, I would consider myself close to being as woke. But at that time, and when I was their age, was the conversation was centered around the Iraq War.
Yeah.
And so we weren't really paying that much attention, actually. Like, obviously, electoral politics is important. But at that stage of the game, you know, Bush had been reelected. Our hope to defeat him, John Kerry, failed. Like, there wasn't this movement there in electoral politics. It was activism, like grassroots type, just pushing against the war. So, I mean, I wasn't paying that much attention to primaries back when in the early 2000s when I was a teen in high school, because all that energy was in pushback against these wars.
Totally. And that's why I didn't even like listen to Hillary Clinton. Like back then, she was the one supporting, you know, a single payer type plan, and Obama wasn't. Now that would actually give me pause and think, who would I support? But back then it was basically, if you voted for the Iraq War, fuck you. Obama didn't, so I'm with Obama, and, you know, go Obama. But yeah, totally different political landscape now. It's not just about the Iraq War. Now there's like 30,000 issues that we have to talk about. And now I'm just looking for the most well-rounded candidate. And you and I both know it's our brother Bernard, you know?
Right.
I think he did good.
So let's segue actually into brother Bernard. I honestly was a little bit disappointed in Bernie.
I agree, and I don't want to say that, but I agree.
He didn't, you know, he didn't do bad. I want to get that. Mm-hmm. He did good. But
yeah.
When there's 20 candidates making, you know, I'm going to talk. We're talking about the two debates as one whole tonight. Mm-hmm. You know, when there's 20 candidates, you can't just be good. You have to push back and fight. And he was fighting for his ideas and his beliefs and his policies, but he wasn't giving any fight in terms of pushback against people going at him. And yep. Not even just going at him. You know, when people would say something just blatantly false or misrepresent their record, you know, that's when you pounce. And listen, mm-hmm. I gotta hand it to Kamala. I also want to point this out to the people who really don't like Kamala. And listen, I have my criticisms about her too, her prosecutorial record. She did not go after Bernie at all. I really do think she. I think there is going to be some sort of unofficial alliance in terms of where we are right now in the Democratic primary. And I think Bernie, Elizabeth Warren, and even Kamala respect each other to a point where they're not going to go at each other till they find it necessary.
Everything you said is exactly what I was thinking. And I kind of apply the same thing to Elizabeth Warren. Like, I think that they were both winners, but they weren't the winners of each of their debates. Like, I would put Bernie in the winner category, but he didn't shine as much as Kamala Harris. And here's what I said kind of going into this. I posted like a pre-debate analysis. I said that what Bernie and Warren need to do as the front runners is they just at least need to maintain. You know, you keep pushing that message, but you don't have to do too much. You just need to make sure you don't faceplant. But what I also said was I want to see, you know, a type of ceasefire between Bernie Sanders and Kamala Harris, because currently they have a common ally, and that's Joe Biden. And I liked the tag teaming that they did, because I think that's a really good debate strategy. They're going to turn against each other one day, but for now, you have no reason to point, you know, the barrels at each other. You have Joe Biden who needs to be taken out, and I think they understood that. Kamala really fucking understood that. We'll be clear about that. She understood that, and I think Bernie also understood that. But I agree with you. He didn't have to do much, but I feel like there's this fine line between, you know, just trying to maintain your position and playing it safe. He erred on the side of playing it safe, and I think you're right. Like, he has the street cred. He has the record. And he influenced all of these debates. Like, he is the reason why we're talking about Medicare for All on a national stage. So I think that if you don't brag about that, you're going to give someone like Kamala the opportunity to outshine you. And while he shouldn't attack her yet and say, well, you know, you're a latecomer, I don't think he should do that. Still, these people are going to go up. People who are very charismatic, Kamala, even Pete Buttigieg, but to a lesser extent, Cory Booker. And so he needs to make it very clear, I'm the one who is influencing the terms of this debate. We are talking about these issues because of me. Remember that. And he didn't do that enough, so he just was more reserved. And I kind of felt like he had the same performance when he did his CNN town hall. So I don't know if you what you had to say about the Fox News town hall, Bernie. I thought he killed it. I thought he did great because he was expecting them to bash him. And then the next week when he went on CNN, he just kind of let his guard down and he didn't perform as well. So I think we kind of saw that Bernie here, to where he's thinking, you know what, this is early. I just got to maintain. There's enough people on the stage. I don't really need to stand out. But I think that he needs to get a little bit more aggressive. I'm not saying go offensive, you know, yet, but give us a little bit more. But again, I don't want to make it seem like I'm down on Bernie. I do think he was one of the winners. The people who, and I'll get your take on this too, who I think overall won in this debate were Kamala. She's the overall winner. I think Bernie was a winner because he had a lot of great spots. And towards the end, I think that Gillibrand would go into the winner category too. even if this isn't obviously an endorsement of her policies. But I think she had a lot of really great things to say about corruption and getting money out of politics. And there was no hedging. There was no, you know, oh, let's get the dark money out of politics. She just, you know, full stop endorsed public financing of elections. Now, does that change the fact that she just had, you know, a fundraiser with Pfizer executive Sally Sussman? No. So we know that she's full of shit. However, just in terms of debate performance, at this stage, you have to say the right things. And I think that these three candidates, they said enough, did enough, and were persuasive enough to stand out. But Kamala definitely knew what she was doing going in. And she's going to be a force in this race.
I got to disagree with you on Gillibrand. I think she just comes off as just not...
More rehearsed.
Yes, yes. Yeah, she's not very natural, even, you know... They all have pre-prepared statements, and they all have their talking points. But you need to do it in a way. You know, Kamala Harris was fantastic at this, at the debate, where it felt just like she was naturally talking from the heart. And, you know, very much so, I'm sure, when she was going at Biden for the busing. My God, I'm sure that was very much from the heart. But that also wasn't just a spur-of-the-moment idea that came to her mind. She definitely came into this saying, if anything comes up with Biden, I have my own personal experience to bring up, and I'm going to bring it up.
And that was huge.
It was, when Biden tries to knock you for the, he went for it. He went for the Kamala's a cop. And when I hear that and go, nah, sorry, buddy, you know, she's, you know, if that was anyone else at any other moment hitting her for that, I probably would have been like, oh, but that just like flew over her head, did not matter at all. It was like, damn, she's the... I felt like it was very possible she ended Biden's presidential campaign right then and there. Clearly not.
I said the same thing.
Clearly not, though. But if that isn't the first, you know, the first drop of the, I don't know, shield or armor or whatever.
Yeah, no, you know what I said about this? I just recorded my video, my post-debate analysis. Haven't put it out. But I said that I think we're probably going to look back to this moment as either the beginning of the end or the moment that was really the start of, you know, well, I guess that's the same thing, but it was the beginning of the end for Biden, essentially, where he was already kind of dropping. So it wasn't like he was going to do much better. I think really his strategy of just hiding his face is that's kind of smart. But during a debate, you can't hide. So she put all of his dirt front and center, and he didn't know what to do. Now, like, if I'm advising Joe Biden, I just tell him to drop out. But if I really was getting paid to tell him how to respond to that, I would tell him, look, you have to fucking apologize. Don't try to, you know...
Oh, he's refusing, even on the debate stage where he's called out in front of a woman who's literally saying your beliefs would have literally made it... I would not be on the stage tonight. If what you want, because of what you wanted, it would not have happened. My life would have been different for the worse. You would not know my name. I would not be here. And even in the face of that, he couldn't even be like, you know, wow, I'm gonna eat my own shit and grin and bear it and say I'm sorry. He would not even do that. It was stunning.
It was embarrassing. And did you notice when he cut himself off when he was defending himself? And then he said, I'm out of time. And then he stopped talking.
Oh, right. Because he was looking for anything to get out of his. He was looking for an out. And there it was. Although that is going to be clipped. I guarantee you. Biden saying, I'm out of time. Or, you know, it's people are going to say, yeah, you're out of your time's up, buddy.
I already retweeted one person saying that.
Right. And, you know, I actually think that Bernie and Elizabeth Warren sort of had the same energy, the same sort of debate presence comparatively. I really do think that. But the terms of each debate that were set by who was on the stage made it so Elizabeth Warren could do that and let all those nobodies duke it out and she just looks like the grown-up in the room. But Bernie couldn't do that same tactic on the stage he was on because it was a bunch of everybody. It was a bunch of not nobodies, people who were leaders in this sort of race battling out. And he couldn't just sink back and let them go at it. He needed to jump in. So, you know, but then at the same thing, as I say this, I see Warren supporters who I really want to get this, say this as clearly as possible, because it's going to come up a lot in the next year. I like Elizabeth Warren a lot. She is my second pick to Bernie Sanders. Obviously because she's a woman, and I would really not like a woman to be president, clearly. No, it's legitimate reasons why she's my second pick and not my first. But there are the same legitimate reasons as why she's my really strong second pick. But my sort of – what I'm about to say is about her supporters, a very specific subset of her supporters who are obviously going to use my criticizing them as us attacking Elizabeth Warren, which I would like to say right now is absolutely not true. But there's this weird Warren supporter contingent who is just out for blood for Bernie, obviously because they see him as in her path to victory, and vice versa for Bernie too. And I'm sure there's a contingent of Bernie supporters who feel the same way. But there's a subset of Warren supporters who are just lying just about Bernie apparently not having plans for these things Elizabeth Warren's coming up with, or Elizabeth Warren manufacturing these ideas out of thin air, and that Bernie never put these same things forward 40 years ago. It's just bullshit, and it just bothers me immensely. And this is not criticism of Elizabeth Warren. But that aside, what I'm getting at here is, at the same breath of me saying Bernie needed to be stronger and more on the attack, I saw so many reactions tonight from the anti-Bernie people on Twitter saying how, man, Bernie is so aggressive. Oh, look at that white male ego on him. It's like, are you kidding me? Bernie was probably at his like most like backed off comics tonight. He was super tame tonight. Are you kidding me? Like the idea that Bernie Sanders was violent tonight. Are you out of your mind? And there's that also that clip of it's a very funny clip of Biden like backing off at Bernie's finger or whatever. But people are passing that around as like, oh, Bernie's invading Biden's space. You're gonna really say Bernie's the one in the space invader when comparing him with Joe Biden? Are you kidding me? Are you serious right now?
Yeah, I'm not buying that.
Are you kidding me right now? There's a difference between talking with your hands, which, listen, as someone who's a New Yorker with both Italian and Jewish blood through my veins, I talk with my hands, all right? It's a thing that I just have grown up to do. I was raised to do. But the idea that that's the same as touchy-feely Joe Biden who doesn't respect people's space, please.
Yeah, that's please. Absurd. Please. That's absolutely absurd. But yeah, I've noticed, like, the people who attacked Bernie a lot in 2016, there's a lot of those same people who support Elizabeth Warren now, and it doesn't make sense to me. Like, I actually engaged with someone who hates Bernie on Twitter but loves AOC, and I tried to ask because this doesn't make sense. Ideologically, they're the same. I mean, AOC is probably to the left of Bernie. So how do you how is it that you can rationalize this when it's seemingly irrational, right? And basically, they just said, well, you know, it's about race. She's more conscious of race. So I think maybe the way that they're rationalizing support for Bernie or for Warren, rather, over Bernie is on that issue. But I think that overall they're looking for reasons to be angry at Bernie and portray him in a negative way, like the hand gestures. Of course, that's not him being aggressive. Like, no matter what he does, there's going to be a contingent, like the 8% of the Democratic Party base, that they're just going to shit on him no matter what. But I don't think that the average voter is going to even care about these little gripes that they keep bringing up. And I find it hypocritical that they are going out of their way to attack Bernie when I think that Bernie supporters like you and I, we've kept it relatively civil, because I think that the progressives in this race, there's no reason for us to take swipes at, you know, each other. Like, I don't think that Warren and Bernie should go at it. And I don't think Tulsi should be taking on Bernie or anything. Like, if it narrows down, sure. But right now, I don't see why they're doing that. And they're the ones who are being overly aggressive, but they're projecting and they're accusing Bernie and the Bernie Bros of doing that one. It's just bullshit. But you said that Warren was your strong second. I wanted to get your take on why that is, because for me, I've really waffled on this back and forth. Because Bernie's my strong number one, and there's like some solid difference between him and my two and three. But I have it tied between Warren and Gabbard, and I don't know who I like more. I've gone back and forth. Warren got a boost because of her just coming out swinging for Medicare for All. But then I also think about how weak she is on foreign policy. And I just keep going back and forth. So what is it that like put Warren over the edge for you? Because I'm a complete like fence sitter on this. And I don't know if there's one issue that's going to drive me in either of their directions. I might just have to, you know, the field might just have to thin out for me to decide.
Well, I think that when it comes down to it, well, I have my problems with Gabbard, and I feel like she is not exactly the best.
I have criticisms of her, to be clear, and Warren, but it's just tough to, you know, who's number two
for me. To me, Gabbard is someone who is good, a good ally to have in the House. Mm-hmm. She's, I actually really don't think she's progressive.
Really?
She's maybe progressive in certain areas, but I wouldn't classify her, like, if I was going to make a list of people on the left in, like, elected office, she's not really, like, maybe because of how the U.S. ideological spectrum is, she'd make that list, but like, you know, Warren has a long history, and I know Warren was a Republican back in the 90s, and I'm sure she'll be hit for that, and she should, frankly, because some of the things I've read about it, and the weird way that whole part of her life has sort of been disappeared, like, it's been, like, no one talks about it. And I did read this article about some of her, and I don't want to bring it up now because I want to get a little bit more into it. It was way too vague.
Right, I know. I brought us down a complete rabbit hole. So.
But Warren, since becoming who she is, a progressive, she has been who she says she is. She has, I mean, just look at all those videos of her schooling, like, Wall Street executives and bank CEOs at these hearings. She's legit. I will say this, though. It is hilarious to me that the same people who knocked Bernie Sanders for being one note in 2016 back Warren, who is by far more one note than Bernie Sanders ever was.
That's
Elizabeth
so true.
Warren is one lane her entire career. It's a very important lane. I happen to appreciate that lane because it very much affects income inequality and where we are economically. And that's the big banks and the financial executives. It has been her single focus. It is all she's really been known for. Look up Warren on race issues. She is absent. Nowhere.
Yeah.
Look up Warren on climate change. Maybe there's support, words of support here and there, but in terms of activism, strong backing of candidates, strong backing of policies, nowhere. And this is, again, if you're someone like Warren, I totally get why you would have this single lane. This was her bread and butter as a professor. This is her thing. She knows it better than anyone. Bernie has used her work in terms of bolstering his own beliefs that he held concurrently, but her work has been able to also back up that stuff. That's why they're such good friends. They are on the same page with this stuff. Like, they are, they back each other up because they believe each other and they know each other. But the idea that Warren does not have these same issues and she's some sort of woke person that is better than Bernie and all this, where? Show me where. It is unbelievable to me that these same folks who attacked Bernie for this stuff are now all in for Warren without any sort of constructive criticism saying Warren's got to be better on this. Because what I remember is that there was no talk about Bernie being weak on this stuff at all. But in 2015, the Black Lives Matter movement was still growing, and those two women at that event interrupted Bernie, which set off this whole thing. And I thought it was good. Regardless of your opinion on those two women who have some of their own weird political background.
The Net Roots one was the one that I really thought was great.
Yes. And to me, we should be pushing all these candidates to be better on race issues, gender issues, economic issues. On every one of these issues, we should be pushing all of them, Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren included, further left. Because they're not left enough at all to where they should be, as even the leftmost of our candidates.
Right.
But so I would get into little debates with Bernie Sanders fans when I worked at the Majority Report on air, callers saying, "No, this stuff is good. We should be pushing Bernie further left on this." But then as the primaries continued on and it just came down to Hillary and Bernie, this stuff was weaponized to act like Bernie Sanders was some sort of a white supremacist, racist, who fled Vermont to get away from black people, which is incredible to me. You want to say Bernie Sanders is weak on race issues? That's fine. I could even agree with you on many different points there. To say he's some sort of racist who fled because he didn't want to help, it's disgusting, frankly. It is gross, especially when he's now on stage with people. I can't think of a single... All the things you want to say about Hillary Clinton, you must give her credit. And, of course, it's helped to be in the spotlight for years and to have her husband being Bill Clinton, who helped, have these connections throughout. But she was there. And, again, you could bring up policies that hurt these communities. That's fair game, too. But she was visible to them. The black communities in this country felt like they knew Hillary Clinton. They had some sort of connection to her. And that's why they liked her. And that's why they trusted her. Can't speak for all African-Americans.
Name recognition was also really huge, too.
Right.
Like, if you don't know someone, then why would you go with someone who you're unaware of, you know?
Right, right. But at the same time, I will give Hillary Clinton credit because, you know, she ingrained herself in these communities, and she had years to build up this repertoire because she's been running for different offices for years, which she had over Bernie, who basically was just running for office for U.S. Senator from Vermont. But that, to her credit, that's what she had. There is no one like that this time around. There is no one who has that leg up, and in fact, time and time again, polls have shown that this time around, Bernie Sanders has one of the best polling with people of color in this country, African Americans, Latinos, Asian Americans. And yet, all of a sudden, this Bernie Sanders bad on race stuff still permeates, yet it happens for nobody else. I guarantee you this shit with Buttigieg tonight, where he went and basically said to the face of black people in his town who were protesting the police killing of a black man, he went and basically said, "I'm not out to win you over." If Bernie Sanders said
horrible.
If Bernie Sanders said that, you would have seen basically them saying Bernie Sanders might as well. When I say you would have seen the media, you would have seen the anti-Bernie contingent across the Democratic spectrum basically saying, Bernie Sanders should put on a KKK robe if he's going to say shit like that. But with Buttigieg, I've already seen Jen Rubin over in Washington Post saying, Buttigieg was one of the winners tonight with an asterisk saying, except on race. Imagine calling someone in a Democratic primary a winner in a debate, but adding the addendum, they blew it on race though. What?
Yeah.
Are you kidding me? Are you kidding me? You blow it on race, you might as well fucking pack your bags and head back home, because you ain't going nowhere in a Democratic primary, buddy. It is a joke.
Yeah.
A joke.
If you can't get what Democrats are good at, which is social issues, then why would we vote for you? Like, that should just be by default, you're good on social issues, you're good on race and gender. But if you can't be good on that, then what are you doing? So, yeah, I totally agree. It's a double standard. Whatever somebody else does, however horrible they may be on certain issues, Bernie will always be hit 10 times more for it. And I think we both know it's because he's like a true threat to the status quo and the establishment. So they have that. First of all, it's that elite bubble that a lot of these people, they live in D.C. and they just all kind of think the same and they're all sniffing each other's farts. So they all like hate Bernie, so it's that. And I also think he is the one true threat, to the status quo, which is why Third Way is trying to warm up to Warren more, because, if somebody is going to win who's progressive, I guess we can deal with Warren. It's irritating. And then when we call it out, though, we end up looking like we are overly defensive and we just can't shut the fuck up. It's you can't win, basically, in terms of messaging in this Democratic Party primary, because people are out to tank Bernie by all means necessary, even if they're bad faith attacks. And it's frustrating. I feel your pain there.
It's really and it's incredible to me. Incredible to me that he's still being knocked as some sort of sexist. Oh, the idea. Oh, that clip. I'm gonna go off again.
Do it.
That clip where he's asked point blank, why do you think Warren is starting to gain over to your detriment in the polls in terms of she's going up and you're stagnant and or even losing a little bit of support, And he says there are many reasons why, being two people who are practically the same on the issues, and he said, you know, there's a contingent who in the Democratic Party who would very much like to see a woman president, and he completely understands that. And he was attacked for that. Are you kidding me? That is a statement of fact. It is factual. He was not saying, oh, she's only doing good because she's a woman, or he was saying, oh, it's not fair, I'm doing bad because I'm not a woman. If he said that shit, of course pillory him and attack him. That would have been ridiculous. He is saying that when two people are the same on everything and they're both doing different in the polls, they're obviously different factors that other people want. I mean, he's not even saying Warren is a woman and that's why she's doing well. He's saying there are people who just want to see a woman president. And he even adds, and I agree with him, I totally get. I get why you would support Warren over Bernie if you like them both. And one of the things that factor in is that she's a woman and you'd like to see a woman president in your lifetime. I'm not going to attack you for that. That's a legit reason. I don't I don't agree with it for me personally, but I totally get it. I totally get it. And I'm not going to attack you for that.
Yeah, no, and part of the problem is they'll logically connect dots that don't exist. So if he says, well, people want to see Warren, then they'll jump to, oh, well, the assumption must mean that you think that you have an advantage when you're a woman. So that means you must be minimizing all of these disadvantages that women face when it comes to, you know, these sexist attacks on the way that they dress and the way that they speak. So they just kind of like jump from one conclusion to the next when they don't have enough evidence to back up their initial claim. And it's like this snowball effect where it just gets down to the conclusion of, oh, it's obviously because he thinks, you know, she has ovaries or something. Like, I don't know if you saw that headline. I can't remember the exact wording, but it was something along the lines of Bernie Sanders thinks Elizabeth Warren is surging because she has ovaries, completely just misrepresenting him. And I wish I could remember who pointed it out. I didn't cover this on my show, but I listened to somebody else talking about this. Maybe it was Ben Dixon. I'm not sure. But just completely absurd. And it's like you can't make these logical jumps unless you have evidence. We are in a time when people do want to see more descriptive representation. That's not something that you're sexist for pointing out. You're just saying, look, we've had like 45 male presidents. People want a woman president. That's not controversial. It's just a fact, like you said. Right. But yeah, it's just for Bernie Sanders, there's something about him where they have to go after everything and, you know, pick at everything he says and overanalyze it, really.
Like, it you know, just go log online, Twitter, Facebook, wherever you want to go, and log into any sort of, you know, Democratic, like base, your basic normie liberal Democratic audience. And you will see countless posts saying, I really wanted to come down to Kamala and Warren because it's I feel like it's a woman's turn. I get it. I get it. I totally get it. I'm not even attacking that. He's simply stating that's the facts, that some people like Bernie, like Warren, like Kamala, like Biden. And I'm sure if you're a normal, like, you know, a Democratic, you know, a Democrat who doesn't really pay attention to politics, like the majority of Democrats probably are, you know, they work and they watch debates and that's their, and they go out and vote. That's their whole, they're not in this political bubble like we are. They see all these people. They probably have a good feeling for all of them, but there's a portion of them who will go, yeah, but I think it is, you know, I think it would be great to see a woman defeat Donald Trump. So I'm going to go with Warren. I'll go with Kamala. And that's factoring into their decision. That's not an attack. That's a statement of fact. There's proof online of people saying this. It's like, are you kidding me? Like, what is all this like? There's literal movements. The Women's March, literal movements saying it's, there's literal, like, get out the vote campaigns, run for something. Emily's List has been doing this for years. Yeah. There's literally, like, organizations to say, if there's a woman running and she's a Democrat and she's a progressive or she's a whatever, a liberal, we're going to fight to get this person elected to office because we need more women in elected office, which I completely agree. Yeah. But that's the statement of fact.
Yeah, no, the assumption, and this is what I honestly think people believe we believe, is that we support Bernie more because he's a male, and it's just this subconscious bias when really this is about policy differences. Like I firmly believe that descriptive representation, getting representation for, you know, marginalized communities, women, is crucial. It's important. However, substantive representation is super important. You have to get someone in there who's going to do the most policy-wise for these communities. Now, in the event, you know, somebody was running like Bernie Sanders who had all the same policies, was female, I think that would be great. I'd probably support that person over Bernie if they were identical politically, just because I agree also with descriptive representation. But I think that nuance is lost, as you said, like on these normal voters who they don't really view it that way. It's just very black and white, matter of fact, you know, oh, well, you know, Warren and Bernie are the same. So if you support, you know, Bernie when you could support Warren, then obviously it must be due to sexism. So I think that because people might make that assumption if they don't really know, if they're not savvy, then, you know, these strategists and media pundits, they kind of exploit that and weaponize it to their advantage. And they're doing it effectively. Like, they do a relatively good job, but I just don't know if it's going to be enough to, like, tank Bernie. You know, they tried last time, and he still kind of persisted regardless of all of those smears. But it's so frustrating. So I totally, you know, I get what you're saying, because we've been dealing with this now for how long? Since 2015? Like, the same line of attacks, just copy-paste. You know, 2016, same in 2020. And it's just, I'm bored at this point. Like, let's talk about policy. Let's move past this.
It's also like, listen, the attacks, as ridiculous as they were in 2016, you could say they worked, because if you looked at how people voted and how the election turned out and how the polls were shown, Hillary Clinton was more popular with overall. Obviously, there's polls that show, and I believe many polls show, and the votes turned out to be this way, that people of color under the age of like 45 actually went for Bernie. The problem is that older people of color come out and vote in much higher numbers than younger people of color. Yeah. So it just skewed those results in favor of Clinton. Not in favor of her, period, but further in favor of her. Like, it wasn't, it didn't give Bernie more of an accurate sort of thumb on this where he really lied with certain groups. But but now when you have people like Joe Biden on stage opining for the days where he was getting along with segregationists, and you have Pete Buttigieg on stage who is failing his community, and there's more than just this police shooting. There's this tape, this hidden tape that I'm dying to find more about.
Oh, yeah.
Where the black police chief in his city, his town. He got fired from his job, I believe, by Buttigieg, for standing up against racist remarks made against him by other people in the force. That's what I believe the rumors in this hidden tape are. Also, there's these stories of Buttigieg, when becoming mayor, trying to clean up. I'm doing the quotations for people listening to the podcast. His town, and by clean up he means go after the poor people who apparently who lived in what seems to be plurality people of color areas in his town, who apparently couldn't afford to spruce up their homes or something like that, and seek to foreclose on them or something that effect. I'm just basically not. I don't want to go too far into it without having no. I want to get further into this, and we'll talk about it then. But there's all these things I'm seeing about Buttigieg, and all you see is, oh, yeah, he's really impressive to me, this young guy. Move over, Bernie Sanders, you racist old white man. Pete Buttigieg is, are you kidding me? Like, all right, let's move on before I you know, pop a vein. to me, the most...
Well, you want to know... Hang on, I have a good segue into the debates, because you want to know how Bernie gets accused of all of this? How was Eric Swalwell, who constantly kept saying pass the torch and making these ageist arguments against Biden and Bernie, how is that not going to be called out? I mean, the debate just ended, so maybe people in the party who all often, you know, denounce Bernie, maybe they'll denounce Eric Swalwell as well. But I mean, these people get a pass, and it's so frustrating when Bernie, you know, he would never get a pass for that. If he made any argument that even had a hint of ageism or sexism whatsoever, he would get denounced. And I'm not saying that he shouldn't get denounced, because if he said something I genuinely thought was tone deaf, I would call him out for that. Like, I disagreed with him when he was talking about reparations, because I think that he came across as, you know, just not educated, not knowledgeable, and tone deaf. So I called him out, and I think he's kind of started to improve. So I'm not saying he's above criticism, but I am saying that Bernie doesn't get the deference that other candidates get. And that's the source of your frustration, I think. And I feel it, too. I feel it, too. Although I feel like I've become desensitized to it to a degree, only because, like I said, we've been putting up with this now for so many years that it's just not surprising. It's not shocking.
Right. To me, this is what I struggle with. You see that phrase all the time where Twitter's not real life. And to an extent, I agree with that in terms of we are Twitter, more so than any other social network, is very political. You have, you know, an activist set, a very politically inclined subset of the American electorate on Twitter, using Twitter on a daily basis. We live in a bubble on Twitter, without a doubt. Twitter is not representative of all of real life. However, what you're seeing more and more is that Twitter is real life in a sense, because you're seeing these left candidates like AOC, Ilhan Omar, Tiffany Caban in Queens, Queens represent, you know, and you would see on Twitter that, you know, these are people are rising and they're going to win. You could see that on Twitter. But then you talk to people who are not on Twitter, who are just locally, and they're like, oh, that AOC has no chance. Oh, Caban has no chance. There was about Tiffany Caban, who just won the Queens District Attorney race as a Democratic Socialist. I was reading an article in a local Queens paper, basically saying that the third place candidate, this guy Lasik, who was the moderate in this Democratic race, who was the only one who was running on this tough on crime, old school type, like DA. His supporters on election night, they were there. This small paper was there at his election night party, and they were in shock, thinking he was going to win. They could not believe he was not even close, a distant third to Melinda Katz, who was the second place contender, and Caban. And I'm just thinking to myself, anyone who is paying attention to this race online, you could know as clear as day that it was a two-person race between Katz and Caban. But these people were not very online, so they didn't know this. So I don't know anymore in terms of, is Twitter real life? Is Twitter not real life? I think you just have to, you know, look at it on a case-by-case basis, really. but back to Swalwell. You're absolutely right. This guy's a joke. A joke. He was up there.
I hate him.
He was up there. I said he was the most annoying person on the stage tonight, and I stand by that.
Yeah.
Even with people like Hickenlooper on there, who were every point they could make attacking socialism, even with those people on there, even with Buttigieg on there, even with Andrew Yang on stage, the most annoying person tonight was Swalwell. Just a little twerp. This guy was so annoying. All he ran on was the fact that he's young. He really thinks, and the funny thing was, right before we went live, I was watching the post-debate coverage on MSNBC, and Claire McCaskill was on, Claire McCaskill. She was on there, and she was saying how, listen, this is what I think happens tonight. I think Kamala pulls from Joe Biden support. Absolutely agree. Right on, McCaskill. Wow, where did you all of a sudden become a political pundit with knowledge on the issue? And then she follows it up with, and I think Buttigieg and Swalwell take support from Bernie Sanders. What a joke. I immediately thought to myself, well, she's still Claire McCaskill. Are you kidding me? Listen, I'm going to make this wager. I'll put any amount of money on it right now. No matter what happens in the Democratic primary, whether Bernie Sanders is the nominee, which I do believe he will be, or he does not become the Democratic nominee, I will make this wager. Regardless of how he lands, he will once again be the most popular young person candidate in this race, bar none. It won't even be close. He is going to run away with the youth vote. And if young people turn out like they did in 2018, young people will make the difference, and they will make Bernie Sanders the Democratic nominee. That's the difference between now and 2016. The 2016 youth vote was good, but it wasn't the levels it was in 2018. And I think that if we could get those levels, and I think actually being that this election will more closely be attached to the idea that it's our chance to vote out Donald Trump specifically.
Yeah.
I think it will be. If those young people turn out, Bernie Sanders will win. Because his young people support is so, like, it's not even close. It's just, it's just leans so, the fact that anyone would think that going up there and saying, I'm young, vote for me, will take away from 78-year-old Bernie Sanders' overwhelming youth support is a joke. It's just unbelievable to me. It's just, and the thing I always bring up, and it kills me when people, I see this online, is the same people who say, the youth are our future. Move over, Bernie. It's time for young people to take over. Well, who? Your flavor of the week young person who has Democratic Party power brokers behind him, who is not representative of everyday young people, or the Democratic base youth who are saying, we want Bernie. We want Bernie. Why can't you hear that they're saying, we want Bernie? I mean, I just want to put this out there once again. In 2016, Bernie Sanders didn't just win the youth vote. He became the most popular young person candidate in modern history. And I say modern because it's an addendum you have to make because the way polls are taken nowadays. Mm-hmm. But just by the way, you know, population growth works, I believe it's fair to say this as well. He was the most popular young person candidate in history, period. He blew away, and this is not me saying that. Vox, we all know, have their moments of being hard on Bernie Sanders. Vox in 2016 looked at the numbers and said, not only do you combine, if you combine Hillary and Trump's youth vote totals, does Bernie Sanders blow that out of the water? He even surpasses Obama's youth vote total. And that was before, they even said this themselves, that was before the Democratic primary in 2016 was even over. So, I mean, I don't know what else to say in terms of people who think Bernie Sanders is too old and young people are clamoring for a young person to take over.
It's absurd.
It's just, go ahead.
Just based on personal anecdotes, I know anecdotes aren't everything, but I have a lot of nieces and nephews who are like college age. None of them are very political. But they all know who Bernie Sanders is, and they all support Bernie Sanders, and they've registered to vote because of Bernie Sanders. Like, this is something that they don't realize, that if you want to pass the torch, then you have to pass it to the torch of the candidate who is supported by young people. But out of all of this, like, bullshit that we heard from Eric Swalwell, pass the torch, guys. My favorite part, and I don't know if you caught this because it was quick, Marianne Williamson is the one who basically made him eat shit. She told him, just because you have a young body doesn't mean you don't have old ideas. And he stopped saying it after that. Marianne Williamson,
she was a pleasure tonight. It would be great to just have her on the stage as just sort of like a palate cleanser throughout the debates.
Yeah.
Like just have her, once she's eliminated, just still have her on there, have her in a corner. And like, just like, you know, there's the lineup of the people who are still in. And then just like have Marianne Williamson like sort of like off to the side. And after every few questions, maybe like every like 20, 30 minutes, we just cut to her and get her feelings on it. And I would love to hear about the orbs, and I'd love to hear about how love is the way, and we will kumbaya Donald Trump out of the presidency. And you know what? I will say this. If Cory Booker said that, I would laugh him off the stage. And he basically is saying that. He's portraying himself as love is the answer, kumbaya. But the thing is, Cory Booker is a sitting U.S. senator who believes he has a chance and wants to become president. I think Marianne Williamson believes in her head this is the truth too. But let's be honest, she is a legit hippie. She's saying this, and no one, she's not gonna win. She's not gonna. But it's just nice to hear this stuff. I sort of liked it. I thought it was endearing. If it was coming from someone who believes they have a legitimate chance and may very well have a legitimate chance down the road, I would obliterate it. But coming from her, it was. I liked it. Good for her. I'd much rather hear that coming from her than spend any time hearing Andrew Yang talk about how automation is going to just
the same fucking just, talking points
and
the same.
Marianne, go ahead.
She basically had my favorite moment of the night when she looked dead in the camera and she said, "Mr. President, I will harness love politically." And you know, in her mind, she's like, "Mic drop, boom." She just, that moment was so special to me, and it's gonna live in my heart for years to come. She's a national treasure. And you know what? What I said going into this was, look, you can't come with this love nonsense. You need to have some policy. She actually did kind of bring some policies. Like, she brought up reparations, which I loved. She also mentioned, you know, our foreign policies with regard to Latin America and how that influences migration and whatnot. So she had the substance, but she also sprinkled in, you know, a little bit of love. I'm feeling the Williamson. I don't know the replacement for feeling the burn, but
feel the orb.
If she doesn't, as long as she doesn't get into like the anti-vax territory, then I'm okay. Just
right.
Don't keep that shit at the door.
Right. Listen, if Marianne Williamson starts rising in the polls, then my opinion will change. But where is she? I don't believe that's gonna happen. But in a who knows anymore. But. But where she is, you know what? Even if she started pulling at like 5%, if she started just knocking people out of the, like legit people, like if Hickenlooper and like Bennett and I don't know, who were some people on the first night? Who's Tim Ryan, Bill de Blasio. If these guys started getting John Delaney, if they started getting knocked out by Marianne, I would love it. I would love it. I will say one thing I won't give her a pass on. Is that bizarre line where we have to talk, if we're going to defeat Trump, we have to start talking about substance. And these people up here are wasting their time getting into the nitty gritty about policy. Marianne, I think you were smoking the orb or whatever, a little bit too much at that point. I think the CBD, whatever it is, I don't even know what I'm talking about. I think all that shit wore out off as she went on. And once she got past that, she was good. But that line was just,
there were some moments that were like, had me scratching my head, but on the opposite end of the spectrum, I was like, go Marianne.
Right.
She was all over the place, I feel like.
Right, yeah. And let's start, we spent a lot of time on the front runners. Let's talk about really quickly some of these losers at the bottom of the ranks here. for a quick recap, I think, you know, to talk about who I think won the night, if we want to talk Chris Saliza territory here. Night one, I think the best performance was probably Castro and Booker, simply because they had to put themselves out there. I didn't think they were very good personally, but in terms of just like owning the sort of debate and getting their voice out there, They did their job, what they set out to do. Elizabeth Warren obviously did very well. Basically, I think she could have put herself more forward, but I guess she didn't need to, being on the stage with those losers, and she's clearly gained the most from that night. So I guess her strategy really did pay off. It worked. Again, that strategy worked that night. Bill de Blasio, I thought, also was pretty good that night. Even though he has no chance, and that Bill de Blasio you saw last night, I can tell you as a New Yorker, does not exist once he gets into office.
Yeah.
He is not that person in office. I remember he was a nobody in the mayoral race when Bloomberg was the mayor. He was not anywhere close to winning. Bloomberg had his second in command. He was promoting her, and she was going to run away with it. And then he started activating the New York grassroots. He got arrested protesting a hospital foreclosure with Cynthia Nixon, and he suddenly became the front runner and became mayor. He was a legit progressive. But this guy, apparently, once he gets into office, he gets wooed by the real estate magnates and the donor class, and he apparently, from what I hear from insiders, not insiders talking to me, but, you know, reports with insiders, is that he set out to actually really in his heart wanted to do these changes, But systematically, once he got into office, he realized he couldn't do it. The old guard that police who hate him, by the way, even though they think he's some sort of super far left mayor, and he's not. He apparently got dismayed by not being able to do any real change he wanted to do, and has become sort of this lame duck mayor who sucks. Very disappointing. And this is coming from someone who voted for him twice.
Yeah.
Listen, though, if that's the case, why be a loser and just walk around with your slumped, your shoulders slumped, you know? He should be out there saying, this is why I can't enact this stuff. He should shine a light on what's going on. But
yeah,
apparently the new thing is that he's running for president because he's literally bored of being mayor. Which,
seriously?
I'm sorry, if you're bored of being mayor of New York City, listen, there's governors who don't have as much power as the mayor of New York City does.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Literally the only other office I can think of that has more probably power in this country is the president. But if you're bored of being the mayor of New York, then you should just, I don't know, buddy. But, yeah, so Bill de Blasio I thought did well, but that guy doesn't exist, so I
Yeah, just... you know he's full of shit. So definitely know he's full of shit.
The
point
there is this moot, you know? So,
yeah.
The polls say Elizabeth Warren is running away with the first night, you know, and Booker and Castro are rising. I think that's a fair assessment based on what we've seen. Now, the polls, obviously...
I agree.
Tonight, it was just, you know, tonight, so we don't know what the next day polls say.
Well, you know who was trending number one on searches?
Who?
It was our girl, Marianne Williamson. And apparently on Google Trends, Kamala and Gillibrand were pretty high. I can't remember who else was up there. I think Hickenlooper was one of them that was pretty high, which he's not the highest, but he's like in top three or four. It has to be just because people were curious of how dumb he was. I can't believe that anyone was like, oh, this Hickenlooper guy, you know, he's really on it. Because I think he made a fool of himself, so it had to be for bad reasons. Joe Biden, what was I looking at with him? I think he also was trending for like the second half. I'm not 100% sure on this, so don't quote me, but I had to have thought because he was tanking. So, yeah, the second night, here's who I had for losers. I don't know if you'd agree with this. I had Biden as like the biggest loser only because he had the most to lose and he needed to not face plan. He just needed to maintain and he didn't. I also had Hickenlooper in this category. And then I also put Andrew Yang in this category reluctantly. And I say reluctantly because I contradicted myself. Like going into this, I said, look, all Andrew has to do, I think he'll have the easiest time. As long as he gets like 1 minute to do his UBI spiel, he's going to do fine. But he did that, and then it wasn't enough. Like, he faded into the background. He didn't jump in on anything else.
I saw how much he talked for. 2.5 minutes.
Yeah, that's
I think that's less than anyone on either night.
It is.
There's no reason for you to talk for only 2.5 minutes. Even the people at the bottom of the ladder. I think Bill de Blasio, actually, for as much as he people think he talked the first night, he was at the bottom of... For minutes talked, he was at the bottom of the list on night one for total minutes talked. But because he constantly jumped in, even though he didn't talk for very long and had things of substance to say, he sort of stuck out to people. Andrew Yang was called on once to basically explain who he was and what the UBI, his idea was. Mm-hmm. And he did that, and that was it. He sat back and said, either in his mind he said, oh, I'm not being called on, so I'm not going to interrupt. Which then this guy shouldn't be here because if he's not going to put himself forward, then I don't know what he's doing. Or second, he didn't have any position, so he didn't know what to say. Which, again, get the fuck out then. You don't belong here.
I was shocked because I thought that it would be enough if he just made his spiel so people can look up, okay, what is this UBI? I'll check it out. But he wasn't his usual self. Like, because I think he's a really nice – like, I think he's – pretty charismatic. He's a nice guy. He comes off as super intelligent, but he didn't even seem like peppy as he usually is in promoting UBI. And I'm sure it was because he was nervous, because he's not like a politician. He's never been on a debate stage. But I mean, he had, like, if you're Andrew Yang right now, you have to be putting other policies front and center. You can't only run on UBI, because that obviously wasn't enough for him in this debate. And part of the problem with Andrew Yang is that he keeps changing, like, what his UBI is. Like, I don't know if you saw, I brought him on my show And I talked about UBI with him, and the question that I posed to him was, are you worried that your UBI can be used as a Trojan horse to gut social safety net programs? And he literally said, I'm one of the last people that will want to gut social safety net programs. Then he goes on Rabe Dubin's show, and he says, no, that's the goal is to gut social safety net programs. So, I mean, it's like, he's one of those people where he is malleable. Like, he'll tailor his message to the person who he's talking to. So I thought that just him being likable would help him, but it was all flat. And he does, like, to his credit, like, I'm not an Andrew Yang supporter. But he has some good ideas that he could have, like, brought up that set himself apart. Like, I believe he believes in lowering the voting age to 16. That's something you could promote that would excite young people. There's ranked choice voting. So he has a couple of things that could have helped set himself apart besides the UBI. And I was honestly surprised because I didn't think he would perform that poorly, just based on personality, because you can't really gauge somebody on a debate based on anything other than performance, because even if somebody is more substantive and you agree with them, they can still come across as, you know, the better or the worst debater if somebody else outshines them. Like, for example, I thought Kamala was the better debater tonight, even if I agree with Bernie more. So I just thought that Andrew Yang was a little bit more charismatic, and I don't know. I was shocked. I was a little bit stunned by that.
Right. If you were to tell me, out of the two, like, weird, out-of-place candidates who really have no political background, Marianne Williamson and Andrew Yang, if you were to tell me that on debate night, one of those candidates were going to forcefully get themselves into the conversation, make sure their voice is heard, another one was going to sit back twiddling their thumbs, I would have guessed it would absolutely be Andrew Yang getting himself in there and Marianne Williamson sort of spacing out, playing a flute in the background or some shit like that. I mean,
but they flipped it. The opposite happened, because I thought that too. I'm like, Marianne Williamson, I didn't predict her going anywhere. Like, I thought she would get one or two questions and she'd talk about love and orbs. But she completely caught me off guard. Like, I was expecting Andrew to be the one who would kind of be not necessarily like a breakout, but I just thought that he would do well enough to where it would give him a little bit of a bump and then he can kind of get the ball rolling and whatnot. But it just didn't go his way at all. And we're going to get hate from the Yang gang, but sorry. It's just, it wasn't a good debate performance.
The Yang gang is, but who is the Yang gang? It's a bunch of, literally a bunch of friggin' 4chan trolls, white supremacists and Nazis. Like, where is this Yang gang? Like,
I don't know if it's real. Like, I think part of it is trolling on Twitter. Like, there is, because I've looked at some of the Reddit threads and I looked at how they responded to, like, my interview to him. And it was a harsh interview, but it was fair. And they were actually pretty measured. They were like, wow, there were some comments that were like, fuck this guy. He's a Bernie shill and he has all this Bernie, like, I have a Bernie action figure in the back. So, of course, you know, this is a biased interview, which is true. But they were like, well, you know, the reason why he doesn't like Yang is because Yang wavered on Medicare for All. So this Yang gang, like, in the way that we are thinking about it or talking about it, I'm not sure if it's just people trolling on Twitter. Like, I'm genuinely not sure.
But you just hit the nail on the head too. Who is a Andrew Yang supporter who trashes Bernie Sanders? I thought the whole idea was that Andrew Yang's legitimate Democratic base is coming from young people who like this whole UBI thing, who were former Bernie Sanders supporters, who think Andrew Yang has got the better plan. Who if they're trashing Bernie Sanders like that, then clearly that's not the case. These people are not, Andrew Yang's not plucking Bernie Sanders supporters off, which I never believed he was doing. This is who I think supports Andrew Yang. Yeah. It's his legitimate support are probably upper class young people in the tech sector. And and even those people are probably more behind like a Bernie Sanders. I'm talking about the specific subset who are all about like the hustle life, who fucking watch Gary Vaynerchuk on Facebook 24/7 and think you need to work like 24/7 to really deserve your minimum wage job or whatever. And that if you really just pulled yourself up by your bootstraps, you would make more money and be successes they are getting loans from their parents. That's the subset of legitimate Democrats that I think Andrew Yang has support from.
I could see that. And I can also see people who just are fixated on that $1,000. And to Andrew Yang's credit, like, part of the reason why I was high on him just like as a person and, you know, as a candidate is because, like, I challenged him on my show about this UBI. Like, I didn't get why people had to choose between Social Security, which is an earned benefit, and UBI. And like later on, like a month or so, he amended that so that way it is additive. So you're no longer choosing between Social Security and UBI. Now, there's still, I take issue with, you know, choosing between food stamps and anything that takes away at our social safety net, I'm against, right? I support UBI only in the sense that it is supplementing our existing social safety net. So the fact that he still responded to try to, you know, adapt to some of these left-wing concerns is admirable. But in terms of, like, the support, I feel like, and maybe it's because I heard this analogy on Chapo and it just kind of stuck with me. It's like young people who just want to have $1,000 per month to game, to blow it on Steam or something. And this is an oversimplification, so I don't want people to think that I genuinely...
That's a great point. No.
I think it's a lot of people who just don't have a full-scale understanding, and they don't realize how, you know, policy is more complicated. I could see the appeal of $1,000 per month. I absolutely can see that. If you're a young person, totally makes sense, you know? So I think that you're right about it being from, like, you know, younger, maybe tech people.
Yeah, UBI is actually, like, a left-wing, like, idea. It's just that, like...
It depends on how you do it.
Right,
it totally
right.
Depends.
I'm not going to say I'm someone who knows enough about the general UBI in terms of... Mm-hmm. But I am someone who's supportive of a left-wing version of a UBI. I think it would be... But see, this is the thing. This is the idea that's incredible to me. Andrew Yang's whole thing about the UBI is that it puts everyone on an equal playing field where everyone gets $1,000 a month to do whatever they want. But then how is it an equal playing field if the rich people also get their $1,000 a month and don't get anything taken away from them, which I don't think anything should be taken away, obviously, from in terms of, you know, we should tax them more, obviously. I'm not saying, you know, we should be taking away... you know, Social Security benefits or anything like that. We should not be doing that. But so rich people get to keep all their money and get $1,000. Whereas people on benefits, they get their $1,000, but they get things taken away. How is that an equal playing field?
That was my entire thing.
How is that equal playing field? It just doesn't make any sense.
I asked him this as well, and he was honest, if I'm thinking of the right question, because I asked him, I'm like, look, my dad actually is on Social Security. He gets $1,300 per month. Why is it that my dad has to choose between UBI and that, but, like, his friend who isn't on Social Security, who still works, and he just gets an extra $1,000, but my dad technically doesn't get that extra $1,000. Like, don't you think that this isn't universal in a true sense, like, universal? You know, he kind of responded that, you know, it's not perfect. I still think we have to strengthen Social Security and do this and that. But yeah, I agree with you that if you're going to implement UBI, you have to be very specific and do it in a left-wing way, because this can be used very easily as a Trojan horse to gut the social safety net, which is why, like, even like some right-wing economists like Milton Friedman supported UBI. You know, this was the one thing that they'd be able to use to take down the social safety net, because once you start, you know, devaluing it in terms of its usefulness, then you can easily chip away at it. You could just say, well, you don't need food stamps, you have UBI now. And I think that is a very dangerous game to play, you know, because then you're not really helping the people who need it the most.
Right. I don't think to not completely trash Andrew Yang, which
I don't want to trash him too.
Right, but not completely trash him. I don't think he is like a right winger or a fascist or whatever, even though his choice of what shows to go on clearly brought that audience to him. You can basically, I've pretty much done it. You could actually trace where the whole alt-right thing came from his supporters, back to him showing up on Joe Rogan. That's where it really took off.
Oh, see, because I didn't even know. Like, I didn't know if the alt-right thing was true. Like, I genuinely did not know if these people really authentically supported him.
Their whole belief is that he's going to give them $1,000 and the world is still going to burn. So if the world's going to burn with Trump, why not support Andrew Yang, where the world will still burn, yet they'll get $1,000 a month out of it too? That's their whole, that's their thing. They think everything's going to go to shit no matter what, but with Yang, they'll get money out of it.
That's a really shitty worldview to have.
Yeah. But I also think that he's like a libertarian tech bro who probably is a Democrat, because he's probably a little bit better on social issues than most tech libertarians are. Techno-libertarians are. That's probably his whole shtick.
There's libertarian leanings to him that make me feel uneasy. Like, for me, I'm very, very, like, in the democratic socialist camp. Like, the libertarian stuff is automatically going to scare me away. And he just has a lot of libertarian leanings for me, and that's fine. Maybe some people in the Democratic Party support that, maybe they don't. It's just not my cup of tea. I still think he's a nice guy, and I don't want to shit on him too much, but yeah, there are things that I have to gripe about, for sure.
Also, I will never support someone whose campaign slogan is about how much they love math. Never in a million years. Well, not gonna happen. Nerd, not gonna happen, buddy.
Stuff yourself in a locker, nerd.
Right. So we know who Andrew Yang's audience is. You know, we know who Marianne Williamson's audience is. It's basically your aunt who buys oysters to shuck from those pearl parties on Facebook. I don't know if you know what I'm talking about,
who
but that's
coffee enemas.
That's totally the Marianne Williamson contingent. Listen, it's really one way to think about how this, really to show how this whole thing went, is how we're talking about Marianne Williamson and Andrew Yang over legitimate people in office like Tim Ryan and Swalwell and Castro and these other people who were just like, I mean, they're running for name recognition, I guess, but they really put nothing on the table. Like, I honestly don't understand the Castro. The people who really like Castro, I'm not anti-Castro. I don't think he's a bad guy. I don't think he's great. I think him and his brother actually have not such a great history in terms of being, they're basically very like neoliberal on a number of things. I mean, yeah. the guy ran HUD and was pilloried for a lot of the things he put forward before he realized, oh, this is, I'm screwing shit up for people. I got a reverse course. You know, I get it, because he's
a
Latino man.
You know what it is? He is strong on immigration. Like, he is very forceful about wanting to repeal Section, 1325 of the U.S. Code, which, for those of you who don't know, it decriminalizes someone crossing the border. It just makes it a civil offense. I think that's great. Like, pushing the Overton window is important, but he's not really doing much to separate himself from the rest of them. Like, he originally was kind of pushing reparations, but he didn't, like, genuinely come up with this. He was asked about this on a show, and then he started talking about it because he realized it got him some attention. So everything about him is very, like, it's all very smarmy, overly rehearsed, and I don't buy a lot of what he has to say. With that being said, he's not the worst person. He's not the worst candidate. There are worse people, you know, that I would like to see drop out before him. But, yeah, I'm kind of with you in that I don't really get the appeal of him. He's super, like, knowledgeable about social justice issues and whatnot. And, you know, he can talk intelligently about immigration and trans issues for the most part. But there are other people who could do that, too, like Cory Booker. Cory Booker can do that pretty masterfully. Bernie Sanders doesn't hit, like, the right language that people like. But with that being said, his entire career is great when it comes to this. So I don't know what lane Castro is trying to carve up for himself, and I think that he doesn't really know either, which is why he's not really doing great. Maybe the first debate will give him a bump. But the candidates who are, I think, getting some traction are the ones that do something to set themselves apart. Like, there's so many people in this race. John Delaney, John Hickenlooper, Tim Ryan, they should all be running as one person. There's no reason for them to all be running individually, because they're the same person. Like, what's the difference between Tim Ryan and John Delaney?
Well,
I don't know.
Well, Tim Ryan, I gotta tell you, he reminds me so much of Tim Robinson from SNL and his Netflix show. Have you seen that?
I haven't seen the Netflix show.
Oh my God, he looks so much like him. He looks like he's a Tim Robinson character, to be honest with you. It's
okay,
hilarious. Yeah. First of all, the show is hilarious. Please watch it.
Okay,
But so I can't make any. You're not going to get any references I make to it, so I won't make them. But yeah, I agree with you completely. These guys who have two first names do not belong on stage. they should definitely find something better to do soon, because they're just taking up space and time in the debates right now.
Yeah, and if you challenged Nancy Pelosi for speaker position from her right, I mean, read the fucking room, you know? And Tim Ryan was talking about, oh, well, we need the campaign in all 50 states and whatnot. Like, weren't you just positioning yourself as a centrist not too long ago? Like, which lane are you going to get in? And once you pick one, then fucking stay in it. Like, I don't get these people. Like, I don't know why they're running. John Hickenlooper, I know why he's running, at least, because he's kind of the John Kasich of this race, where he's like, oh, I'm the sensible moderate, you know, even though I'm shitty, but I'm the sensible moderate. But like for Tim Ryan, Eric Swalwell, these people don't have anything that, you know, that's going to lead to them getting a real base of support. And I'll happily eat my words. Well, I won't happily eat my words, but I'll eat my words and stand corrected if I'm wrong. But like, I want to talk to an Eric Swalwell supporter, for example, and ask them why he's their number one, or a John Hickenlooper supporter. That would be really interesting. And ask them, like, what is it about John Hickenlooper? Because you have 20 candidates, or more than 20. Why would you support this person? You have no reason to. Whatever boxes they check, there's another candidate who's more charismatic that will do better. And, you know, I'm just confused. There's so many people who don't need to be running. I don't know if you heard, there's another guy that jumped into the race this last week. I can't even think of his name. Joseph something, his last name starts with an S. It's like, why are these people running? Stop.
Right. I'm sorry, we had a issue on the stream apparently, where we dropped for a second.
Yeah,
hold on, let me see what's going on. Weird. All right, well, if you were watching and we dropped, sorry about that. I have the whole show recording locally, so it will be part of the podcast. You will miss nothing. But we're still going to keep going for a little bit longer. We'll go for another one. Like, you got another 10 minutes, Mike?
Yeah, that's good. I'm on the West Coast, so it's earlier for me than it is for you. Right. I know it's late for you. What time is it for you?
It's almost 2 a.m.
Almost 2 a.m. Yeah.
And tomorrow, programming note, everybody, tomorrow I will be in studio guest for the majority part with Sam Cedar. I will be making my journey back home to my old stopping grounds of the majority report. Sam was making fun of me apparently on their Twitch stream earlier today. Earlier today, I guess is technically right, but during the debate, because I had forgotten how to get to the studio. So I asked him for the address. I only went there for I was working there for like 5 years. That studio was the studio for like, what, 2 or 3 of the years. But it's been a long time, so I forgot how to get there. He had to remind me. Sue me.
Hey, if it makes you feel any better, I would have forgotten too, because there's no internal compass in me. Like, people make fun of me all the time. I'm horrible at this. Like, I don't know what direction is north, south. And if I'm, like, getting directions, I need, like, a landmark. Like, okay, do I turn at the McDonald's? Don't tell me the street. Just tell me, like, I need, like, this fucking, like, kindergarten explanation. So I'm probably worse than you to make you feel better.
Why, thank you. I'll take that.
Yes, take it.
So what else can we talk about? Well, I think on night two, without a doubt, I think it's hard to say anyone other than this, no matter how you feel about her, to be honest. Kamala Harris won tonight. She won the second night. Hands down. It's not even close. I'm sorry. As much as I love Bernie, it's her going after Biden, how she did, was so good that I will, it moves her up in my book as well, to be honest with you.
Well, because it's, you know what it does, and I agree with that. Like, I'm also thinking about who is going to be good against Donald Trump and hit them and be charismatic. And yeah, I think she proved that, you know, she's electable and whatnot. Like, that's something that people are thinking about. Electability is huge. I think that Bernie's the best bet, because I am of the mind that we've got to have a far left candidate to energize the base to win. But with that being said, when you look at someone like Elizabeth Warren, I am worried if, you know, she went up against Trump, if she would be able to hit him as hard as someone like Kamala. I think she did well, but yeah, she went up just in terms of, I think she's more, you know, electable. And I think a lot of people in lefty media, even if we were all obviously behind Bernie, people were noting that she has political talent. You know, you don't have to support her to acknowledge that, you know, she does know what she's doing. And she's one to look out for sure, because she's going to give the rest of the candidates a run for their money. I think she's probably going to outlast like the Buttigieg's, certainly the Beto's, you know, of the race. I think Beto's almost done.
Right. We didn't even talk about Beto. Oh my God.
We missed Battle, yeah.
Your first time, the last time you were on this show, the first time you were on this show, we did a whole hour and 10 minute long episode right when just on Beto when he jumped into the race. If there is any sort of proof of just how far Beto has fallen, the guy is, we talked about Eric Swalwell, Tim Ryan, Hickenlooper, Williamson, Yang, de Blasio. We even mentioned Delaney, and we forgot about Beto. There is, combined both nights, no matter how bad anyone did, no one did worse, and I include Biden too, because as hard as he was hit, he's probably not going to fall, not yet at least, as much as Beto is probably going to fall after that first night of his debate. Beto was a footnote in a debate where it was a bunch of footnotes. He should have been right up there with Warren as stealing the show. And if anything, not only did he underdeliver, he got destroyed, wrecked by everyone on that stage who went at him.
Julian Castro, like, ripped him, and that was great to watch. Here's what I'm curious about, because I don't want to say, because I'm terrible at predictions, and I don't want to jinx it, but I feel like at the rate he's going, I don't know how he's going to have the money to sustain a campaign. Like, he's, at the rate he's going, he's got to drop out after Iowa, but does he even make it to Iowa at this point? Given how he's lost so much momentum, you only have so much money to get you to a certain point. And he had a big boost at the beginning, so that's, you know, that's going to give him a little bit of longevity. But overall, you've got to have money. And I just see the support getting lower and lower. He's dropping in the polls. Like, will he even make it to Iowa? It's tough to say. I think probably he will, but if he does, he's got to be out after Iowa, maybe New Hampshire.
It's amazing that, like, this was the guy who jumped in the race. Asterisk next to this, but that's how it was promoted. The guy who outraised Bernie Sanders.
Yeah.
And all the Bernie haters jumped behind him as, this is our guy to defeat Bernie and win. And he's polling lower than I think, like, Yang in some.
He tied with Mike Gravel, I believe.
That is, it's just
someone who doesn't actually want to be president.
Right.
He tied with them. Dude, what are you doing with your life? What are you doing with your life? And everybody who's telling him, you know, run for Senate. No, because now there's somebody running for Senate challenging John Cornyn, who is better, Sema Hernandez. So it's like, dude, just go away now. we don't need you. We wanted you to defeat Ted Cruz, and I think that he thought that was just us endorsing him overall, but it was, no, dude, you weren't Ted Cruz. We wanted you to defeat Ted Cruz, but now we have no use for you, so go away.
Right. No, that's literally, he the people who say Bernie is an egotistical maniac completely miss the fact that they're legit egotistical maniacs in this race. And Beto believed the hype. He thought he was what everyone was saying he was. Legitimately, he thought he was the guy to save everyone from Cruz, and then he was the guy to save everyone from Trump. And clearly, he was not quite accurate on his assessment of himself.
Yeah. To say he misread the room was the understatement of the century. It almost makes me feel, I mean, not really, but a little bit bad for him, because it's like, that's got to be a blow to your ego. I mean, these types of people, they need their ego to kind of be put in check. But I mean, he's got to be feeling like shit, because he just thought, oh, we're going straight to the White House. You know, I have so much momentum. Oh, what an embarrassment. What an embarrassment. And like, what is he? I don't know what Beto stands for. He has some relatively good proposals. Do you ever hear him talking about it? No. And what's the most embarrassing part?
Excuse me, Mike. Excuse me. How dare you? The guy just unveiled his plan to tax us a military tax.
Oh, God, I forgot.
anyone who doesn't join the military will be levied a tax.
It will
cost you money to not join the military or be part of a military family. So, excuse you, Mike. How dare you? How dare you misrepresent Beto?
I forgot about that. Did you hear that he relaunched his campaign as well? Because when he launched, if you noticed, he didn't do any like media appearances. He didn't do his CNN town hall. So like a couple of months afterwards, when he started to tank, he did a relaunch where he rebranded himself. Then he started going on The View. He had his CNN town hall, and then he got, I think, a slight boost after that. And then he started going down again. So it's like he's frantically trying to figure out a way to plug the holes in the sinking ship that is Beto. And for whatever reason, he thinks attacks on people who aren't in the military is the way to do that. All right, keep at it, buddy. Let's see how that works out for you.
Right. His whole thing was that he didn't need to do the media. He was going on an anti-media tour where he was only going to do direct town halls with the people of Iowa and New Hampshire. And he wasn't going to go on any shows, take any questions. And, you know, real...
How cocky and arrogant of you when there are 20 fucking people, more than 20 people running the race. Like, I mean, he has no strategy. The fact that he, you know, got a lot of momentum against Ted Cruz, I think he underestimated how much of that was because he was running against Ted Cruz, and he thought it was all because of him. No, it was because you were running against Ted Cruz. I would vote for a turd over Ted Cruz, and I literally mean that. So he doesn't realize why he got popular in the first place. And I'm sure he's realizing that now, but what a failure.
I wonder, though, now that I think about it, I do wonder, is he going to make it to Iowa? Because he does have the money, because he's got that big backing. But yeah. Will they stick around? Will he run out of it and then end up, you know, blowing it all on who knows what? Well, I guess we'll just have to wait and see for that one.
I think the establishment is going to be strategic. And, you know, if Bernie and Warren, like, stay relatively high in the polls, I think there's going to be pressure from, like, leadership for him to drop out and consolidate support. Kind of like the way that we saw, like, in 2016 with Donald Trump. They wanted to defeat Donald Trump, so they were like, okay, let's go with, you know, Marco Rubio now. He's our guy because Jeb Bush tanked. And now it's like, oh, he shit the bed. Let's go with, you know, Ted Cruz now. So I kind of feel like at some point they're going to have to start consolidating support because there's just too many candidates. And Beto obviously isn't going anywhere. So, I mean, he has the money. If he makes it to Iowa, I don't know. I don't want to say I'd be surprised, but I just can't see him going past Iowa. Like, I feel like if there's no movement, he's got to tap out after New Hampshire at the most because, I mean, it's not happening, you know?
All right. I almost feel like we spent too much time talking about Beto, even though we just remembered he was in the race. Is there anyone that you want to talk about that we haven't talked about already? I'm trying to – honestly, I should probably have a list of who's in this race in front of me. But I'm trying to think who, if we didn't, I mean, we mentioned Delaney. He's a joke. He's not going to, I mean, we'll talk about a guy out of like totally running in the wrong year in terms of.
Do you see how many likes his tweets get? They get like 10. And he posts like these town hall photos where there's like four people in attendance. And I always will catch myself like quote tweeting to make fun of it. Then I'm like, no, this is kind of sad. I shouldn't. This is like punching down. We're to that point where he has so little support that like a YouTube like political commentator will just have people end up flocking if I draw attention to it. And I just feel bad at this point.
Right. I wouldn't feel bad. These are presidential candidates, but I get what you're saying.
Yeah.
You're a nice guy, Mike. You're a nice guy.
I'm trying not to crush his soul, even though I have made fun of him. And I don't know if I feel bad about that. I've clowned on him. We've all dunked on Delaney at one point. But, you know, I try not to go below the belt. But some of these candidates are such jokes that it's so difficult. And they're such, like, targets for me to, like, make fun of them that I can't hold back sometimes. But
right.
I try.
Right. All right, Mike. I think we covered all these the bases here with this this debate. Who was – overall, who do you think what is your – your look for after, let me reset here because I'm stuttering all over myself. It's 2 a.m. After these two nights of debates, where do you think like the top five are sitting? Who are the top five? Where are they? Who gained from these debates? Who lost from these debates?
Okay. I think Joe Biden, we should start to see, a bigger decrease. That's kind of what I'm expecting after this debate. I'm expecting a pretty big bump for Kamala. I'm expecting Elizabeth Warren and Bernie Sanders to kind of stay the same. And that's basically top four, like Bernie, Warren, Kamala, and I forgot who the fourth person was. And then I think there's going to be somebody else, like a Castro or a Booker, who might sneak into the top
Buttigieg,
five.
Buttigieg.
Yeah, yeah, I think somebody's going to probably replace Buttigieg as that kind of like fifth place person. And I don't know who it's going to be yet, but I'd say it's going to be between like Booker or Castro. Maybe Gillibrand, but probably not. I think she had a good performance overall, but I do think you bring up a really good point that she's really transparent and rehearsed. So I don't think we're going to see too much movement. The largest from these debates is going to be Biden and Kamala. Biden's going to dip, I think, and Kamala is probably going to surge a little bit. The you know, what's going to be interesting to watch is if she can maintain that, because she had a big boost at the beginning and then it kind of trailed off. So we'll see what she does with that, if I'm right and she does get that. But that's kind of my overall sense. But anything can happen because there's so many people running. You know, you never know.
Right. Yeah, I agree mostly with that, your assessment. I think, you know, Biden will drop. We're going to begin to see it. Whether he trades places with someone as the first place person right off the bat, I don't know. But that percentage gap between him and the second and third place candidates, that gap is going to close big time. And I think you're going to see Bernie, Kamala, and Warren probably swap places for a bit until we get further as second, third, fourth, maybe even first, second, third, like a rotating group there, until we get further into the debates where it just gets down to further down to just them. And then they can just really go at each other, and then people will be able to figure out who they really want to get behind.
Totally agree.
I do think maybe there'll be that wild card, like a Buttigieg or a Castro or a Booker. I don't know how far they'll get. I don't know how long they'll stay in it, but I do think there probably will be that wild card. I don't know who it'll be. Yeah. I think we're on the same page. And the real question to me is, for me personally, I think the question is, does Bernie get any bump out of this? Because personally, I don't think he did. He did good. He did not do great. I think he will maybe gain some supporters, but not enough to get some huge boost. He didn't do bad, so he won't lose anybody. But will the bump be big enough to sort of be shown in the polls? That's my personal question as a Bernie supporter. But I think the real big question that everyone's going to want to see is that, how much did this hurt Biden? That's the real question, because I don't know. I know we all see this and we think Kamala schooled him, and she definitely will rise in the polls. But the real question is, that Democratic voter who likes Biden to begin with, will they even care? Will they even care? So that's the real will they even care about what Kamala brought up to him? That heartfelt, real life experience that, I don't know, if in a perfect world, Biden would have stepped off that stage in that moment and bent the knee to Kamala and said, I quit. I drop out. You win.
Yeah.
Take my place as the pick from the Democratic establishment.
Yeah.
But
I endorse you, m'lady.
Yes. He turns into Jaime Lannister and knights Brienne of Tarth. Yeah. Oh man.
There's a lot. I don't even know.
Where are we going with this?
We're going to go down a really bad rabbit hole, I feel like. We're going to get into Game of Thrones and then back to Beto.
Right. Listen, speaking of people dropping off the face of the planet, can you believe that Game of Thrones was a popular show just a few months ago this year? Like, that last season was so bad that people went from
I'm still butthurt.
People went from like being consumed by this show, people not being able to stop talking about it for weeks. Like, it consumed 24/7. It lived in their dreams and their imaginations. To literally, Game of Thrones, I forgot it was a show that was on this year and was that popular. Like, that's how bad...
I stopped thinking about it.
That's how bad that last season was. Unbelievable. Mm-hmm. I'm watching Deadwood right now, by the way, if you want to talk about TV shows. Because I never saw it. Yeah, I never saw it. And there's And there's a movie that just came out this year. After the show went off air years ago, they put out a new movie. So I want to watch the movie. So I'm watching Deadwood now, yeah.
You know what? That's smart. I'm in a show hole currently, is the term, I think. And so we just rewatched Stranger Things, and I'm trying to make it through like The Handmaid's Tale. But yeah, I don't know what to watch. After Game of Thrones, I felt very like butthurt, and I didn't want to get into another like big show because, you know, it ended very shittily. But yeah, I'll check out Deadwood because I need something else.
Oh, yeah. I meant to ask you, Mike, this is a little bit off topic. Watch Deadwood. Is your channel YouTube monetized?
Yes.
So I recently was demonetized. I don't have a huge YouTube audience, but I did have monetization.
Your entire channel was?
My entire channel was demonetized. And it was right, it was a few days after I did an interview with members of Boston DSA who were putting together the counter protest to that white supremacist straight pride parade.
They demonetized your entire channel?
My entire channel was demonetized. Again, I wasn't making a ton of money. I was making enough where it was paying for, like, my podcast hosting fees, like, every other month or something.
Yeah.
But still, it's not nothing when you're starting something, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And I was demonetized, which means I also lose my Super Chat benefits. They didn't tell me why. And...
That's... Can you contest it or like make noise about it? Like if I feel like if you go on Twitter and you tweet at them and get enough people to like draw attention to it, I feel like that can get some type of traction. Because I don't know if you remember like the Serfs. I don't know what happened to them.
Well, their whole channel was deleted.
Oh, it was deleted. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, and they got that brought back. So I feel like there's got to be some way for you to fight this. That's such bullshit.
Yes.
Holy crap.
That's a good idea. And you know what? I think tomorrow when I'm on the Majority Report, it might be a great time to galvanize those forces.
Yeah. Look, we'll go to war for you. I'll retweet it and whatnot. And you have a very huge gift. Like, if you were a Republican, you would have been on Fox News talking about this already. So, you know, pull out that victim card. We'll help you out, bud, because that's bullshit.
The funny thing is, I made that point when I got demonetized. And, you know... You're right. If I was a right winger, I would have, right now, I would have made probably $100,000. I would have gained about 1 million YouTube subscribers. Yeah. I would have, like, it would be ridiculous how much money and fame I would have been able to bounce off of getting demonetized from YouTube.
Yet here, Ted Cruz would have introduced the Matt Binder Act.
Right. Right. And I'm not going to correct you there that my last name
Did
is Binder.
Did I fuck up your name?
Yeah. It's Binder, but it's all good. I don't mind it.
Binder, but you, my heart was in the right place. I hope you can understand.
No, I totally
after
get it.
After you got my name right.
Listen, I'm used to, I gotta tell you, I'm used to looking at people talk about Amy Klobuchar and being like, I don't recall her like throwing me across a room. What's going on?
Well, it's weird because like,
We forgot about her. She was like a major name for a while.
Yeah. And to get back to your name thing, I don't think I've ever heard your name like said out loud. Like I've watched you for years and whatnot, but I don't think I've ever heard your name said out loud.
It's possible. It's possible. Huh. But a lot of people called me Binder when I was on the Majority Report. But it's also possible you just heard them call me. Nowadays I'm Old Matt because. The guy, Matt Leck, who replaced me, is new Matt.
New Matt.
I'll be honest, though. There's this, I do believe, from just the experience of seeing tweets and stuff, there's a significant portion of Majority Report listeners who do not know that we're two separate people. And they think I'm still working there. I'm just from tweets I get where it's like, oh, it's like, at Sam, at Michael, at me. Guys, the stream just went down. Literally, like 2 years out now from me last working there. 3 years out now, 4 years almost last out now from me last working there. I still get like tweets where it's like, guys, the stream just went down, which I don't mind. I love being part of that family, but I feel bad that they think I could do something to fix it.
Right. Looking into it.
Yeah. Guy, what I should do next time is like, stream just went back up, but you got to go to youtube.com/MattBinder.
You totally should do that.
Oh, man. Mike Figueroa. All right, let me see if I got this. Here we go. Mike Figueredo. Did I get it?
That's perfect. Yeah, there that's perfect. Let me try you one more time, okay?
All right.
Matt Binder.
Ooh, you got it, buddy. I know that's a hard one. Once you know it, it's a hard one still. But
I had to think for a minute before saying it because I was worried.
All right, guys, I'm actually going to jump off with Mike. This is the whole show today. Usually I read the comments and go on for about an hour and a half, usually longer, hanging out with you guys. But it's 2 in the morning here, so I'm not going to be doing 2:15 actually now. So patreon.com/MattBinder to support this show. YouTube.com/MattBinder to subscribe to this show. Mike, where could people find the Humanist Report if they're not familiar with your show?
Humanistreport.com has links to my YouTube channel, my social media, Twitter, all of that. It's the main hub, so you could just go there and find what I'm about at humanistreport.com.
All right, everybody. Hope you enjoyed our post-debate coverage of the Democratic primary, the first two nights of the Democratic primary debates. Is this like the longest? Is this like the earliest these debates have ever been? I know like the Republican clown card debates usually started around August, back when there were so many Republicans. But I don't remember a debate ever starting this early.
Who knows? The last time it was in October. We got the first debate in October. That was when the DNC was like limiting debates. There were six at first. Right. So this is early. And then the next one is in July. I don't know if there's one in August. But it's nice to have debates this early,
I agree.
Especially when there's so many candidates.
I agree. And I Mike, I hope you will join us for future talks about post-debate analysis. Let's put it that way.
I'm down. Awesome. Always down, Matt.
Awesome. Enjoy your 3 extra hours that you have over me being on the West Coast.
I will.
Take care. And folks,
too.
See you all next time. On Doomed.
I have an idea about Donald Trump, about how we're going to beat Donald Trump. You harness fear for political purposes, and only love can cast that out. So I, sir, I have a feeling you know it. So I, sir, I have a feeling you know it. So I, sir, I have a feeling you know what you're doing. I'm going to harness love for political purposes. Love for political purposes. So I, sir, I have a feeling you know it. Love for political purposes. So, Mr. President, if you're listening, I want you to hear me, please. I have an idea about Donald Trump.